DAB Digital Radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
Thank you very much, Nicky. Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. Welcome to the programme. Tell us today why you chose to work in the NHS. 0500 909 693. Harassed, bullied and abused by patients. Undervalued by bosses who don't care enough about making people better. That's what life is like for many working in the NHS, according to a survey of more than 150,000 staff. So, if you work in the health service, tell me why you chose to do it. Doesn't matter what your job is, tell us about it today. Do you feel appreciated or under attack? Does the trust you work for have patient care as its top priority? Does it value you enough? 0500 909 693. You can text 85058. Tell us why you chose to work in the NHS. Also, if you go to my blog this morning, you could read the postings of Brits in China defending the country where they now live and work. We'll talk to some of them later in the programme. The website address is bbc.co.uk/5live. First, the BBC News from 5 Live, Justine Green.
Good morning. The mother of Shannon Matthews, the 9-year-old girl who disappeared for more than 3 weeks, has arrived in court in Dewsbury. Karen Matthews is charged with child neglect and perverting the course of justice. Nick Ravenscroft is there.
Perverting the course of justice can cover a pretty wide range of actions. So today is going to be really interesting because when Karen Matthews stands up in the dock before the magistrates, they will read out the charge against her, and then there will be a brief summary of what the police and the prosecutors at least say that she has done.
The International Monetary Fund is expected to cut its forecast for economic growth in Britain later, but the Chancellor, Alistair Darling, insists Britain still has a very strong economy. Britain's biggest bank, HSBC, is preparing to take advantage of the weakness of its rivals in the mortgage market. It's offering to match home buyers' existing fixed-rate deals with other lenders when they come to an end, but customers will need to have at least 20% equity in their home and pay a fee. Mohammed Al-Fayed is abandoning his decade-long legal campaign to prove that his son Dodi and Princess Diana were murdered. Now the inquest has concluded, he said it was time to move on for the sake of Princes William and Harry. Our royal correspondent Peter Hunt says Mr. Al-Fayed had little option but to admit defeat.
We have to remember that in court, his central conspiracy claim, which he in his heart still clings to, collapsed for lack of evidence. There was no evidence put forward, and his lawyers accept there was no evidence for the plot involving MI6 and Prince Philip. The other factor is, what could he have done? I think those are quite limited in law in terms of challenging the jury's verdict.
A survey of NHS workers in England suggests many feel undervalued and unsafe. 155,000 health service staff were questioned on issues including job satisfaction, infection control and training. Here's Catherine Marston.
39,000 NHS staff say they faced abuse of some kind in the last year. Just over 20,000 say it was a physical attack, and of those, just 66% actually went on to report the incident. The public sector union Unison says the figures remain depressingly high as there's no real decrease in the number of attacks. Today's survey also reports around three quarters of NHS staff do not feel valued by their trusts, and that is the most common reason given to leave a job.
Ryanair is to be investigated by the Office of Fair Trading. The Advertising Standards Authority says the airline had persistently misled people by making exaggerated claims about the availability of cheap flights. Ryanair accuses the authority of being biased against it, a claim denied on 5 Live by the authority's Director General, Christopher Graham.
99% of the time, advertisers, agencies and media can sort things out with the Advertising Standards Authority, and we don't need to go anywhere near the Office of Fair Trading. But I've just come to the conclusion that this particular advertiser prefers to be an outlaw, so I've referred them to the sheriff.
And in the city, the 100 share index is down 22 at 59.68.
Here's Mike Saul with the sport.
Good morning. Arsene Wenger will this morning be coming to terms with what he described as a dodgy penalty decision, one which has ended Arsenal's Champions League campaign. Kolo Touré, who committed the foul on Liverpool's Ryan Babel, said it was a decision he found hard to accept. Chelsea's Frank Lampard says revenge will not be Chelsea's main motivation ahead of their latest Champions League meeting with Liverpool. The two clubs will meet in the last four for the second time in 3 years. Liverpool won on both previous occasions. Tonight, Manchester United will attempt to make it three British clubs in the semi-finals for the second year running. They play Roma at Old Trafford, leading 2-0 from the first leg. And Nick Faldo has dismissed reports of a rift with opposing Ryder Cup captain Paul Azinger. The American was quoted as saying players from his generation don't want anything to do with Faldo, but the European captain says he's spoken to Azinger and believes he's been misquoted.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's 9:05. Welcome to the programme. Victoria Derbyshire with you until midday. Tell us why you chose to work in the NHS. We ask because of this huge survey of staff today. Many are satisfied with their jobs, but many feel undervalued by bosses and undervalued by patients, it has to be said. Let's have a word with Donald McKechnie, who's a consultant. He's head of Rochdale's A&E. Hello to you. Hello, Donald.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for coming on the programme. Tell us why you chose to work for the NHS.
Well, I think it's a long time ago. I have to think back. I became a doctor because I think basically I wanted to treat patients. I come from a medical family. My father was a GP. He tried to talk me out of it, but I decided, and it was probably the last year at school, that that's what I wanted to do.
And what's it like at Rochdale's A&E? Do your patients value you? Do they abuse you? What is it like on a typical Friday night?
I think the vast majority of patients do value the service they get, but unfortunately not all. And I think it's that not all minority that tend to make their presence felt all too frequently. And that's very sad that staff in this survey are reporting the fact they don't feel valued, and obviously as well that they're being assaulted.
And don't feel valued by patients, but also by the top bosses as well.
Yeah, I think we're all aware of the target culture that we're now living in the NHS. There's a lot of pressure on performance and producing figures on paper that say we're doing things right, and it's often not a measure of quality, is it? And I think we have to get the balance right between hitting targets and producing quality for patients. And I think this is where staff feel a little bit at risk and compromised, because they want to provide the best quality of care they can. And often when there are time pressures on, that doesn't always allow them to do that.
Right. What is the most satisfying thing about your own job?
I think just seeing patients getting better and being able to treat them and getting rid of pain. Because most patients who come up to A&E come in with painful conditions. And the first thing to do, of course, is to relieve that pain and discomfort, and then go on to diagnose and treat, and if necessary, refer them to colleagues. Because working in A&E, we have very little information often to go on when patients attend.
And when they do attend, when they do come to A&E, as you point out, obviously they're in pain, they're worried, they're stressed, they perhaps have very high expectations of the kind of treatment they will receive, and sometimes you can't match that because it's just too busy, hence perhaps patients become abusive. Is that a fair link
to make? I think people like communication. I think communication is the key, probably in any profession, and you in the media know that more than most, but it's equally important in medicine. Keep the patient informed what's going on, and the patient is usually happy. If you keep information away from the patient, like how long they're going to have to wait, what the plans are, then you're under pressure straight away. Patients get aggressive, and you have to be experienced to be able to spot when things are getting a little bit out of hand, and that's when you have to perhaps change tack, reconsider, reevaluate your communication strategy with the patient, because doctors and nurses have to talk to the patients, and that's often forgotten.
When was the last time one of your own staff was assaulted?
Well, verbal assaults happen on a regular basis in A&E. People shouting and swearing at staff happens weekly, daily probably. And it's a question of how often it's reported, I think, that's the more interesting question. It's almost the case that, and I think the survey seems to back this up, that the vast majority of people have seen verbal abuse becoming as part of the job, going with the territory.
Really?
And they don't report every case, because to do so would mean filling in paperwork. And, of course, we all know form filling. It takes you away from the basic job you're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. It takes time, so they often just ignore it. And it's often just when the more serious cases occur that things are documented.
So, have you had members of staff who have been assaulted, physically assaulted, recently?
Well, it's quite interesting, because the breakfast show at 5 Live actually came up to Rochdale's department on Christmas morning. And on Christmas Eve, three of the nursing staff were, I won't say seriously assaulted, any assault is a serious assault, but they were left with bruises, they were left very shaken. by a violent patient. So that's one of the most recent ones I can remember, which have been significant.
And why did that patient do that?
They were drunk. Mm-hmm. And, of course, alcohol is, I won't say always, but usually to blame in these situations. And were unhappy with perhaps the length of time they were waiting.
Yeah. Stay with us, Donald McKechnie. Let's have a word with a consultant psychiatrist who's previously worked in the NHS for 20 years, Dr. Charlotte Page. Hello to you.
Yes, good morning.
And I think you left after that time for family reasons, but why didn't you go back to the NHS?
Well, yes, I took a break, for, as you say, just what was intended to be a short break for family reasons, to care for somebody. And when I had a few months off after something like 20 years in the NHS. During that period of time, I just suddenly realised what it was like to have a quality of life again. I realised that life, you know, could be enjoyable as opposed to the immense pressure and endless kind of unfulfilling type of work that I was doing in the NHS. It wasn't the work that was unfulfilling, but the milieu in which I was expected to work without support, without adequate resources and so on and so forth, and in a situation of danger. And I just had one of those sort of moments where, with clarity, I just thought, I've got one life, I don't need to spend it on the front line anymore.
Mm. And so you felt under-supported, neglected even, possibly?
Well, I worked, as you know, in NHS mental health, and a bit like my colleague in A&E, it is a slightly different area from most in the sense that violence, verbal and physical, is an everyday occurrence. It's just something that we accept as part of our job. I think it's not the violence as such that was difficult in that situation, but the lack of support, the lack of interest. Administrators just were not interested in the fact that not just me, but other colleagues were being assaulted on a regular basis, were being sent out to visit people in their homes without proper adequate support and training, and so on and so forth. So from my point of view, it was not the patients that drove me away. It was the way the NHS had changed and the way it seemed then to be run by bureaucrats who had little understanding of what was going on. And as Donald said, was it Donald?
Yes.
Quite rightly, it seemed to be about both target setting in terms of numbers and figures and so on.
Yes.
And also about risk management. The authorities and my colleagues tell me this, they still feel now that they're just managing risk. There's nothing creative about mental health work anymore. It's literally just bring people in to avoid headlines.
Victoria, could I come in?
Please
on,
do,
on a couple
yes.
of points there, because I'm actually a little bit put-your-tongue gamekeeper, because I am a clinical manager now as well. and the reason I did that is for the very reasons that Charlotte has mentioned. I didn't feel there was adequate medical support or support by managers to the doctors and nurses. And if you can't beat them, join them.
Yes.
And I've very much done that. And I think I've been doing that for nearly 2 years now. And meeting with the managers on a regular basis, there is a different culture. They are willing to change. Certainly my trust. They're willing to listen to the doctors. They're willing to move things forward. And I've noticed that there's a big positive in the last 2 years. And it's interesting in the surveys in the last couple of years, things haven't improved dramatically, but at least they've stopped deteriorating.
Yes. OK, well, that's interesting. I wonder if people will agree with you who do work in the NHS. I'm going to talk to a GP in a moment, but let me read a couple of text messages at this point. This from a nurse. I went straight from school at 16 years old as a cadet nurse, and I've worked at my local hospital ever since, for 30 years. Morale plummeted about 10 years ago. There are far too many layers of managers. There is too much paperwork. That is what annoys nurses. Sarah says, I work as a diabetes specialist dietitian. The work we do makes a tremendous difference to our patients, but the job satisfaction makes up less and less for all the red tape and government meddling. Richard Falk is a GP in North Lincolnshire. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Victoria.
Why did you choose to work for the NHS?
Gosh, that's a long time ago. I think I wanted to be a doctor, and inevitably you work in the NHS when you come out of training when you're 23.
Mm. But you stayed there?
Yeah, I think like colleagues have spoken previously, we do love the job and we do like to help patients. It's just increasingly difficult sometimes in the environment that we're faced to keep smiling through.
Who doesn't value you, would you say?
99.whatever percent of our patients are absolutely lovely, appreciate us and cause no problems whatsoever. Unfortunately, it is the small percentage that sticks in your mind. And interesting, listening to colleagues speaking, we actually do now get to the stage where day-to-day verbal abuse is really just seen as normal. Mm.
So give me an example, give me an incident that you've experienced recently where you'd be being verbally abused by one of your patients.
Myself personally, and I think in general practice, it's actually often our reception staff who take the brunt of it. They're the ones who are the obstacle, in inverted commas, to the doctors. They're the ones who are seen as being awkward and you can't have an appointment and so on. So, as I explained to your researcher, personally, I think I've been quite lucky. I've only had one really nasty incident in 20 years. But on a day-to-day basis, our staff will get people kicking off at the window about why they can't be seen now and why they can't see a particular doctor now. And just day-to-day abuse seems to be part of the modern vernacular, really.
Yeah. And do you feel valued by the government?
No. I mean, this may be specific as a GP, maybe more than hospital colleagues, but I think across all the public services at the moment, the doctor and dentist review body recommendations have been accepted by government in the last day or so. We've had a lot of adverse publicity in the media about how much we're supposedly earning. Those figures relate to 2005 to 2006. We've had two pay freezes and another one announced this year, which doesn't help when you're getting a government that basically seems to be beating up on us. And when one of the colleagues there was talking about expectations, I think if expectations are unrealistic because they've been fed by government, A&E, you will be seen within 4 hours. General practice, you will be seen the same day by a healthcare professional, 48 hours. It pumps up expectations, and then that small percentage are the ones who kick off.
Can I just say, Victoria, that point? Yeah, that's the target. And I think this is the problem. It's purely number crunching. It doesn't look at quality of care.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the things with the four-hour target that I used to work in A&E as a clinical assistant years ago. If everybody has to be seen within 4 hours, it's a silly target. And it just ended up recently where more and more staff were being employed to meet the target. Somebody actually should have said 4 hours in A&E if you actually need to be seen. And a number of people who come to A&E should just really be turned away and told to go to the chemist or go to see their GP. But silly targets, I completely agree with both colleagues, silly targets.
OK, interesting. Thank you very much, Richard. Donald.
I may, Victoria,
yes, go on, Charlotte, please do.
I wanted to say, in case I have to go.
Yeah.
It's 30 years since I qualified as a doctor, well, just over. And one thing that interested me last year was that with the purpose of trying to organise a reunion of those of us that trained together, a number of us had contact by email people we haven't seen for 30 years.
Yeah.
And, of course, people share their news, you know, what's happened to them in 30 years. And the thing that surprised me, perhaps it didn't surprise me, but was quite shocking, was that colleague after colleague after colleague, bear in mind they're all in their mid-50s, senior GPs or senior consultant specialists in hospitals, all without exception wrote of things such as, the NHS is dreadful, it's killing me, can't wait to get out, I couldn't retire a minute too early, I'm just counting the minutes and hours till I can get out.
But, you know, if you worked anywhere for 30 years, you might feel that.
Well, you might do, but I don't think that's how... the way they describe it is not like I'm bored with being a surgeon,
yes,
or I'm fed up with being a paediatrician, I don't like children anymore. It's more about I want to do my work, but the bureaucracy is stopping me. Surgeons have written of not being able to organise their own theatre lists because it's organised by targets rather than clinical need. And, you know, it surprised me, in fact, to the point that I thought of putting them together with people's permission and actually sending them off to one of the newspapers to just see what is happening to the people who should be who are at the peak of our profession,
mm-hmm,
who just want to run away if they can.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And one other thing I just want to say is there was a programme on the television, a BBC programme, Sunday night, which I watched, called Casualty 1907 or something like that, and it portrayed the London hospital, a big teaching hospital, in 1907. And to my amazement, I thought, this is how hospitals were run when I qualified in 1977. So in 70 years, although medicine had moved on, the way the hospital was organised had changed very little, with matrons and so on, doctors in senior management positions. I think in the last 10 years, it's changed out of recognition. And I would urge any administrators to watch that programme, and that's how the hospital should be run.
OK, thank you very much for coming on the programme, Charlotte. Okay. Donald McKechnie, thanks for your time. We'll hear from the head of health at Unison in a moment. Also, Kailash in Manchester, who's a GP, and Gillian in Edinburgh, who's called us, who's a senior biomedical scientist. Some messages from you as well, who are listening right now. I work for the NHS. I love it. I work in a small community hospital where patient care comes first and staff are treated with respect. We base our nursing care on traditional values. I wouldn't change my job for the world. The only big stresses come from the bureaucracy from above. Kevin says, I work within the Nottinghamshire NHS Trust. I work with clients who have learning disabilities and mental health issues. In fact, the client I'm currently looking after is sectioned under the Mental Health Act. I'm in danger of physical assault every working hour. Do I love my job? The answer is yes. I'm making a difference to someone's life, and that is why I am doing it. If people are unhappy with their job, then it really is time to move on. A text message from Chris in Sussex. Delivering a baby, saving someone's dad or mum, helping a frail old person from the floor and making them a cup of tea. These are just three examples of the incredibly rewarding work we do in the ambulance service. The vast majority of people we experience are friendly and grateful and far outweigh the negative, drunken, drugged or abusive people we just have to tolerate. So tell us this morning why you chose to work in the NHS, what your job satisfaction levels are, what the frustrations are. So far, targets is being mentioned. Targets as a reason for not enjoying your job is being mentioned quite a lot. 0500 909 693. It's 9:20. Here's Helen with the travel.
The northbound M61 is still closed. Junctions 8 to 9, that's Chorley through to the M65 after the accident earlier this morning. It is likely to stay closed for at least another 2.5 hours until around about midday at least, so one to avoid. The westbound M65 has a lane closed still after the accident around junction 3 at Riley Green. Westbound M62, one lane closed, junctions 22 to 21. That's Rishworth Moor through to Milne Row. And the eastbound M4 has a lane closed, junctions 5 to 4B, Langley through to the M25. The southbound A10, that's still closed at Cheshunt, and the A38 in Cornwall, just to the east of Bodmin, is blocked in the Glynn Valley, not far from the Glynn Lodge and the timber merchants there. Helen Blaby, 5 Live Travel.
BBC Digital Radio. 6 Music.
Do you ever just take, like, random dislikes to people?
Adam and Joe.
He was a man on the plane, and he had a cold. Not only was he coughing, but then he was sniffing. Then I noticed his socks. They were black with pink flowers on them. So I started staring at him, and he smiled.
Adam and Joe.
And I think he thought I liked him. Little did he know that it was that I loathed him.
Saturday mornings from 9.
And now you're married.
For more details, go to bbc.co.uk/6music.
Thank you, too, to Richard Falk, a GP in Lincolnshire. Kailash is in Manchester, who's also a GP. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. How long have you been a GP for?
I've been GP for almost 25 years, and I'm in this country for 30 years.
OK, and when you came here, how was the profession, your profession viewed, do you think?
See, when I came to this country, I think the whole world appreciated NHS as envy of the world.
Really?
And I was so impressed with the philosophy of the NHS to start with. I think when Bevan in 1948, almost 60 years ago, established NHS, I think there was only one line. The keystone of his philosophy was freedom from fear. And irrespective of your wealth, irrespective of your sex, irrespective of your race, you were provided the best possible care, I thought, in the whole planet.
But and now?
Now? I think I would not even call it NHS anymore. It has, as I think earlier speakers did talk about targets, I really call it a target-chasing organization. It has become a political football, more or less. It's no longer the patient care, the prime moving factor in NHS. It is something to do with speed, with access, with targets, and that's it. Quality is the casualty. And 18 years, when I was here, when you talk about my experience of NHS, I saw 18, 19 years of Tories in which they totally starved NHS of any funding. And in 1997, when Tony Blair was trying to come to the power, I'm sure everybody would remember, he said one word, 24 hours to save NHS.
And of course, the Labour government has pumped billions into the NHS, and some of that has been wasted.
Absolutely. I think in my own patch in Northwest, only day before yesterday, there was a very, very revealing news. this government set up these so-called ISTCs. They are independent surgical treatment centers, private providers, just for speed and access. And do you believe it that £10 million are just wasted in Greater Manchester for episodes which were not done? For example, the certain PCTs, they paid for hundreds of episodes, and end of the day, only dozens of those things were done because patients don't have any trust in those private centers. So in a way, if you look at overall, setting up PFIs, setting up these private centers has cost taxpayers billions.
Yeah.
You know about this so-called NFIT, that is the IT program of NHS. How much it has cost us, and has it delivered anything? Billions been lost. And at the same time, the government comes in, the NICE comes in, we can't even afford a cancer drug, for example, for affordability.
Okay.
We could waste billions, but can't afford the proper patient care.
Kailash, many thanks for contributing to the programme. Gillian is in Edinburgh. Ruth has emailed us from Horsham, and Ruth is leaving the NHS after 25 years because she's so fed up. I also want to introduce the head of health from Unison, Karen Jennings. Unison is the main union in the health service. Hello to you, Karen.
Good morning.
So your reaction to the results of this, it is a huge survey, 156,000
yes.
members, employees of the NHS.
Mm-hmm.
Broadly speaking, a lot of people love their jobs, but feel undervalued. You'd recognise that, presumably, wouldn't you?
Oh, we do recognise that, absolutely. I mean, I do support everything the previous caller said about the NHS, and I think we have to be very careful in not negative stereotyping it in such a way that everybody thinks that the NHS is an awful health service. You know, it treats 1 million people every 36 hours free at the point of use, and that's pretty remarkable in the globe today. But what I would say is, what was interesting in the survey, and this is a survey that's done annually, so we can see year on year the trends, that over 50% of staff don't believe that patient care is the top priority for their hospital. And that's very, very concerning, because that says a lot about what managers are thinking about.
So did we find out what the bosses thought the top priority was?
Well, we know what the bosses' top priorities are, because if you look at board agendas, you'll see it's preparation for foundation trusts, it's about extending hospital buildings through private finance initiatives, it's looking at outsourcing cleaning services and so on and so forth. It's become a market. And so when you have a member of staff that is abused, shouted at or violently assaulted, they don't have confidence that the senior managers within the NHS will respond in a way which will support how that member of staff needs to take that forward. For example, by prosecuting the either the relative or the patient. And you hear time and time again that verbal abuse becomes, you know, part of the daily trials and tribulations of staff. That is not acceptable, because what that does is create a culture. It lifts the level of violence that starts to take place.
I'd love to hear from a senior manager, if you're listening, senior manager in the NHS. Do come on the programme. You're very welcome. 0500 909 693. Karen, thank you. Ruth, hello. What's your job?
I'm a community nurse.
And why are you leaving the NHS after 2.5 decades?
Well, part of it is just the state of the NHS at the moment. It's heartbreaking. There's still wonderful work being done, but the service seems to be really run on the goodwill of staff. But I think the thing that strikes me most of all, that NHS has now become a misnomer. It is not a national health service, it's a national health business, and it's being run as such.
And because of that, there have been many benefits to patients to do with targets. You know, you may hate having to see somebody within 4 hours, but for that individual patient, that may be a very good thing.
Absolutely. But some of the ways that targets are being met, it's just having almost like having people on a treadmill. If all you're doing is you've got to be looking at time, you haven't got time to spend with the patient. Sometimes spending 5 minutes actually sitting down, holding a patient's hand and talking to them and explaining what's going on, that, you know, you can't put a price and you can't put a target on that, but it makes a huge difference to that individual person. And people aren't being looked at as individuals anymore.
Ruth, thank you. Hello, Sarah in Bishop Stortford. Gillian in Edinburgh, good morning. Gillian, you've been very patient. Tell us what you do and what your level of job satisfaction is.
Hello, Victoria. I'm a senior biomedical scientist in the laboratories in Edinburgh, and have to say I'm currently off on sick leave with stress-related work-related stress.
What are the stresses of your job?
The stresses are the work-